What is up, everybody? Dr. Joe Armstrong here, and I am super excited to tell you that we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Medgene. It's a new day in animal healthcare, and Medgene is wide awake. Medgene is the first USDA-licensed producer of prescription platform vaccines. Medgene's prescription platform vaccines help veterinarians in the swine, cattle, deer, and rabbit industries respond faster and more efficiently. Learn more about Medgene's prescription platform vaccines at MedgeneLabs.com. That's MedgeneLabs.com. Or better yet, follow Medgene on Facebook and LinkedIn. Medgene, it's a new day in animal healthcare. Welcome to the Moose Room, everybody. It's Dr. Joe Armstrong. I'm here with Brad Hines, and we have a guest today. Gary Bosch is with us, who is a veterinarian with Medgene, and we're excited to have him today. How are you doing today, Gary?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on today. Good to be here.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. We're going to try to get through a lot today, but before we get too far, we always ask our guests two questions. We keep track of the answers. We need to know a couple of very important things, and one of them is, what is your favorite dairy cow breed?
Okay, it's a Holstein. I grew up milking Holsteins, and I haven't changed my mind yet. So
that is disappointing, because the right answer is Jersey, as Brad and I know.
That's right.
But that's okay. We always give a pass if you grew up with them. If you don't grow up with them and then you say Holstein out of nowhere, that's just unacceptable. But
sorry.
All right, let's run through that total. Holsteins are still leading the way at 24. Jersey's at 20. Brown Swiss at 11. Montbelliard at 3. Dutch Belted at 3. Guernsey's at 3. Normandies are at 2, Ayrshires at 2, and Milking Shorthorns at 1.
I'm just trying to figure out which one of them is the happiest cow.
There's a lot of different choices, but Holstein is still leading the way, unfortunately, and they just got another vote. Okay, well, the second question, Gary, is what is your favorite beef cow breed?
I like Herefords.
Oh, yes, that is the correct answer. Yes.
Brad's a Hereford guy as well.
They have more charisma than all those Black Angus do.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you've made a friend with Brad, that's for sure. Let's run down the totals. Black Angus at 16, Hereford's at 12, Black Baldy's at 5, Scottish Highlander at 5, Charlet at 4, Red Angus at 4, Shorthorn at 3, Belted Galloway at 2, Brahmin at 2, and then all with 1. Stabilizer, Galvey, Kianina, Simmental, Elore, Jersey, Belgian Blue, Brangus, Piedmontese, White Park, and miniature Scottish Highlanders.
There's a lot of breeds out there. You went through those pretty fast.
Well, we've done it a few times now. There's a lot of them out there. All right, so those are the important questions we need to ask every guest. We only ask once, so you can't add your totals if we do another episode. It doesn't work that way, even though Brad will probably be lobbying for it with the Hereford side, at least. All right, so let's get into this. So, Gary, give us just a brief background about you. You know, where are you from? Kind of at the end of that, finish with where you are now and what role you have in the company you're working for now.
Sure. I grew up in Northwest Iowa, not too far from where I live right now in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, on a farm. We had dairy cows, we had pigs, we had beef cows, not Herefords, though. It was Angus, but I still like Herefords better. You know, I went to Iowa State University, got my veterinary degree, practiced in Iowa for 11 years. Part of it was in Northeast Iowa, where it was mainly dairy practice, but some pigs, so a little bit of beef. And then I moved to Northwest Iowa, where it was a lot less dairy there, but a lot more pigs and a lot more beef cattle. I was a partner in a practice there, left practice after 11 years and went into industry. So I've been in the animal health industry now for 30 some years. I started off in vaccines in a small vaccine company in Minnesota, actually, in Worthington, Minnesota. Then worked for several major companies, worked for the Upjohn Company in pigs, and then, believe it or not, I moved to Michigan, and then I moved to New York, where I worked for Pfizer Animal Health, which was in New York City at the time. Big experience for a little farm kid from Northwest Iowa. Even got bigger than that, because then I was recruited by Novartis and eventually went to Switzerland, Basel, Switzerland, to head up their research and development, their global research and development. So another big adventure for a farm kid from Iowa. eventually got bought and got sold. Novartis got sold to Elanco, which is another big animal health company. I worked there for a couple of years and then retired. And then I went to, Medgene needed some help with their business. Their business was just ready to be commercialized. My specialty had been to bring technology from out of R&D and bring it to the market and put it into veterinarians' hands and get them to position it where they needed it. So that's why Medgene wanted to work with me. So my role at Medgene is really to commercialize their technology. I'm working with all of the groups that face customers plus the people that manufacture the vaccine. So it's really all about getting the right product to the right place, the right time. And so I work with all those groups who manage that piece of the business.
Been a lot of places, and like you said, for a small town kid, New York City, all the way to Switzerland, that's a lot of adventures.
Yeah.
Did you expect that, to have that kind of an adventure when you joined the animal health industry?
Heavens, no. And if you'd asked me if that was where I was going to go when I was getting out of veterinary school, I said, you're nuts. It's like, that'll never happen. But it did. So every journey takes all kinds of turns, and some of them are a lot of fun.
And then you retired, and you came out of retirement. That's awesome. I mean, you must really have seen something in Medgene to come out of retirement.
Absolutely. Medgene technology was, you know, the one thing that I've always been enamored with in veterinary school, through practice and through animal health, is technology and the advancement of technology. And when I saw what Medgene was doing and they showed me their technology and said, this is an evolution in vaccines. And I said, I think you're right. And I said, if this works, it's going to be big. It's going to be big. And over time, what we found is, yes, these vaccines work and they work quite well.
Let's get to the big question. Who is Medgene?
Well, that's a complex question, but I'm going to try and keep it simple. Medgene is a startup company, a biotech company out of Brookings, South Dakota. It was founded by an entrepreneur, Mark Lukey, and a professor out of SDSU, South Dakota State, Alan Young. Alan had a technology and Mark had the business ideas. And so they got together and they started off with this technology. I mean, Dr. Young's passion is preparedness for foreign animal disease. And he thought his technology, his platform, was a good way to help manage vaccines for any kind of foreign animal disease that would be threatening the U.S. But what they found is that it was not only good for that, but it was also good for production animals where current vaccines were not working well, or where there was no vaccine for a particular problem that was arising in a herd. At the time, the licensing process for commercial vaccines is long and arduous, you know, it takes years to do it. And the USDA, CBB, the Center for Veterinary Biologicals, had recently passed approved a new type of vaccine, which is called prescription platform vaccines. And Medgene's platform was a perfect fit for that new class of vaccines, which was just came about in 2018.
So are you operating as an autogenous vaccine company? And that's how all of your vaccines are truly licensed? Or is this truly separate from that autogenous labeling?
That's a good question. We do not have an autogenous license. We're not an autogenous manufacturing. So the USDA CVB has several categories of vaccine licensing. One of them is commercial vaccines, which you're very familiar with. Autogenous vaccines, where the manufacturing process is not licensed. The facility is licensed, but not the manufacturing process. And then this new category called prescription, which is not autogenous. It kind of is a hybrid between the two. So because we initially got that first license, that full license, our manufacturing process is licensed by the USDA. So we have to follow those, very similar to what a commercial vaccine does, our manufacturing has to follow a strict outline of production. Whereas autogenous, you don't really have a strict outline of production. You just grow it, kill it, put it in a bottle. This is much different than that. But you can swap out genes of interest, which makes it more convenient and faster to get the vaccine into veterinarians' hands and producers' hands. But at the same time, it's not autogenous, not commercial. It sits right in the middle of those two. To work with the CVB, to get the manufacturing processes approved, to get the platform approved, they had to get a license, a full license first in a disease. So they used influenza in pigs to get that first approval. And it's a full license. That has a full license on it. From there, they expanded that into the platform license, which is what the CVB requires you to do. And that prescription platform license then allows us to swap genetic sequences, genes of interest, in and out of that platform to build different vaccines that are needed in herds that have problems with whatever disease problem they're dealing with. It's really an almost uncapped type of technology that will allow you to approach almost any viral disease at this point in time. As long as the parts of the virus or the sequence of the virus or the genetic sequence of the virus is known that creates the immune response. And so that's where we're at right now. We have what we call master seed constructs, which are really all of the different genes of interest inserted into our platform. We have probably over 300 of those that we can manufacture vaccines from, a variety of vaccines. But on the cattle side, we have rotavirus and coronavirus, both the enteric coronavirus and the respiratory coronavirus, which are both increasing in prevalence in the field, so to speak. And the virus and the vaccines that are out there were probably put into position or manufactured or first licensed many years ago. And those viruses, in a lot of cases, have changed, which allows vaccines to be modernized with this technology and bring the right virus sequence into the vaccine so that you get better results.
You talked about needing a full license to get started.
Yes.
That process takes a long time.
Yes.
A long time. But I think what you're talking about with prescription platform vaccines and that technology is that it's fast. Walk me through. I'm a client. I have a problem on my farm that I can't seem to get a handle on. Let's say there's not a commercial vaccine for that, or I've tried it and it's not working for me. Walk me through the steps of, okay, I want to work with you to solve this problem on my farm. How is that going to work and how fast? What's the timeline to make that happen?
Well, the first thing we do is we start to collect samples. Actually, we work with the veterinarian. The veterinarian is the key. The herd veterinarian is the key to the whole thing. We work with the veterinarian. They start collecting samples. So if you've got something in your herd, we're going to find it. And molecular diagnostics have come a long ways. I mean, they've evolved into the preferred way of doing a lot of diagnostics over the last 10 years and longer. So what you can do is you can take antimortem samples. When you see, you don't have to have a dead animal. You can just get a nasal swab, take some scour material, or get a blood sample, and you can send that into a diagnostic lab. The diagnostic lab can run all the molecular diagnostics, find whatever evidence is there about the problem you've got. And then what we can do with that is find the genetic sequences of those viruses that come from your herd, and they can be then used to make a master seed construct. So we put that into our baculovirus platform, and we can run that through our licensed manufacturing process to get a vaccine for the veterinarian, for the herd veterinarian. And then that vaccine can be used in that herd, but we don't stop there. We also monitor the progress of that vaccine or how the health improves in the herd. And if the health is not moving in the right direction, we can get more samples. we can do more comparisons of viruses that are in the herd versus what we're putting in the vaccine, because things can change very quickly. And then we can update that vaccine very quickly too. So the process is fairly straightforward, but it starts with the veterinarian and it ends with the veterinarian who manages the health of that herd.
You get a sample and you sequence it. And you said the word baculovirus in there.
Yes.
What is that doing in the process? And is it just replicating that sequence for you, or what is it doing?
The baculovirus is a insect virus. It's not infective to people, animals, anything. But it's a big virus that will allow you to insert all kinds of different genes of interest into it. And that virus also produces a massive amount of protein. So if you insert the gene of interest, you put that in that baculovirus, and then in our manufacturing process, we grow that baculovirus that it then secretes protein that represents the genetic material or the result of that genetic material from the virus and you heard from the sequence we put in there. So you're really generating that baculovirus generates what we call antigenic protein. And it generates that antigenic protein that then goes into the vaccine. That is the vaccine.
Perfect. So there's no baculovirus in the vaccine. We're just talking about using that virus to produce the protein that is specific to stimulating the immune system in the way we want.
Yes.
Just want to be clear, because one of the things that's been coming up so much lately, and I hear a lot about in the news, and people ask me every time I speak, they ask about mRNA vaccines. And I want to give you the chance to make sure you have a chance to talk about how your technology is completely different.
It is different. The sequence is the common thing for both mRNA and the baculovirus. So the sequence would be similar. But the difference is that we take the baculovirus and produce the antigenic protein in our laboratory. So you're not getting that into the animals. You're just getting that antigenic protein. mRNA uses the cells of the animal. So you're actually injecting that genetic material from that virus. It's not going to replicate by itself, but it gets into the cells of the animal, that of the host animal, of the animal you're vaccinating. And then that's where, inside those cells, is where the antigenic protein is produced. And then those cells break down and release the antigenic protein. So the big difference is that the bioreactor, so to speak, is in our laboratory. And for mRNA, the bioreactor is the animal. And that's where the big difference lies. So we're not asking the animal to produce the antigenic protein. We're doing that in our lab, and we're providing that antigenic protein in the form of vaccine. So all the animal has to do is mount an immune response. Whereas in the mRNA, the animal has to first produce antigenic protein, which is then released from its own cells, and then it has to mount an immune response. So it's got double duty on the mRNA, and you don't have to do that with our vaccine. So we're not introducing the actual genetic material into the animal. We're just introducing a subunit protein that is basically a killed vaccine.
That being a killed vaccine with the antigenic protein in there, are you also adding an adjuvant?
We use a couple of adjuvants in our vaccines. One of them is a one called an oil and water, which is a standard adjuvant. And then we have another one that's called water, oil, and water, which is just another adjuvant that's been used for years in manufacturing vaccines. The one we use in cattle is the water, oil, water. It's a proprietary adjuvant that we make ourselves. The water, oil, water is a very powerful immune stimulant, so that when we use that with the subunit protein vaccine, it creates a very, very strong immune response.
Given that it's killed, you're using an adjuvant product. Are we still following our same schedule for most of these vaccines to vaccinate, wait 3 weeks, and then vaccinate again?
Yes, but one thing about our water, oil, water adjuvant is that it does have the capability to create enough immune response after one dose. Although we don't recommend it that way, two doses is probably still the better way to go. Sometimes when you're running cattle through a chute, you don't have a chance to get them back again. and give them another dose. So that's one of the big reasons we're trying to use this other adjuvant that has a potential to generate that immune response within one dose, so that you can, you know, calves going out to pasture in the springtime, you're running through the chute, you give shot, you're probably not going to run them back through again. So we're trying to find a way to make things more convenient for the producers. Dairy calves is a little different, or dairy cows, you have those available to vaccinate more easily than on the cow-calf herd. So we're trying to make it easy for people to get that immune response that they need without having to put too much stress on their animals.
So you've mentioned cattle, which is why you're here, right? You make cattle vaccines, and we're talking about cattle, but you do have other species in the mix that you guys work with. What are those other ones? I know you mentioned pigs, but what else are we talking about?
The most of the volume is going through pigs and cattle. That was the intent of the original. But we also have a deer vaccine. Now, it's actually one of the first vaccines we put on the market was hemorrhagic disease, episodic hemorrhagic disease, EHD in deer, which is used by a lot of deer farmers to protect their herds from that deadly disease. Works very nicely there. We also, a couple of years ago, the USDA CVB came to us and said, well, there's a introduction of a new rabbit vaccine, a rabbit virus in the U.S. called rabbit hemorrhagic disease. There wasn't a vaccine available, and our platform was a good fit for that. And so we worked with the CVB to get a vaccine introduced into the U.S. for that disease. And that vaccine is headed for a full license, but we do have it on the market under conditional license right now. Works fantastic. That vaccine is extremely protective. We also we're working on other things too. So we're working towards sheep and goats. We're working towards turkeys right now, poultry later. But we're working towards getting approvals in all those species. We're also looking at expanding our rabbit vaccine into companion animals, dogs, cats. The possibilities are, I should say, for all species. We're limitless on our species. We have to do the work to get those approvals. We're looking at everything that makes sense.
That's good. I mean, it seems like a platform that's designed to be applied to just about anything. And so it's good to hear that you're working on all these different species. We'll get back to cattle, because that's what's most important on this show. Is working with cattle producers any different than working with other species, or working with cattle any different than working with other species, or is it all about the same?
Well, from a standpoint of our process and our system and how we get the vaccine to them, it's very similar. But sometimes we can, you know, there's ways that we can work with cattle production. For instance, we may have a changing virus, but the changing virus, I'll use an example here, rotavirus. In cattle is a changing virus, one of those viruses that changes over time. But we can survey the entire cattle population, because a lot of those gene sequences are publicly available. And what we find is, in a lot of cases with cattle, that although the virus has changed and the current vaccines may not work very well anymore, it's very consistent. So we can create master seed constructs that will cover a high percentage of the virus that's in the population of animals already. There are many instances where we already have those vaccines available off the shelf, so the timing can be shortened quite a bit. If we're looking at a herd and we look at their sequences, and we may already have a vaccine available that will fit into that herd. So we can really shorten that time.
Big question. We've been talking a lot about viruses. Why not bacteria?
That's a very good question. Viruses and bacteria are different when it comes to genetic sequencing. Viruses, you can find a genetic sequence that fits, that will be protective with just a much shorter amount of amino acids than, say, for instance, a bacteria. Bacteria has a big genetic sequence, so it doesn't fit into the baculovirus platform very well. However, we are working on a new platform, just for shortness. It's our bacterial platform. So that is already in our development process. So we're working to bring that to market within the next few years. And at that point, we will start manufacturing bacterial vaccines as well. And then looking further down the road to bring combination virus and bacterial vaccines. So we have all those in our scope and where we're going, but the platform we currently have, the baculovirus platform, is not a good fit for bacterial vaccines.
When I think about some of the bacterial vaccines that we have available specifically for cattle, they're old, and bacteria, some of them have changed a lot, right? So I'm always excited when someone's trying to figure out a way to update things on some of those bacteria.
We have a long list of bacteria targets that we're thinking about and develop and looking to develop. So I'm with you on that. There's a lot of changes in bacteria. You know, the thing that is, it changes, new ones emerge, and you got to have a way to manage that or get a tools in the toolbox to manage those things. And these platform vaccines are a great tool to have in the toolbox.
Okay, last question on this episode. We're dealing with H5 influenza in poultry and cattle, and we have alpacas that are positive. We've got goats that are positive. We've got people that are positive. Are you guys pursuing that and looking at a vaccine that involves dealing with our current issue with H5N1?
Yes. The short answer is yes. If the USDA APHIS would allow vaccination, we could be on the market in just weeks. We have the master seed constructs available right now, so we've got those ready to go. It's not approved for manufacturing. It's not approved for distribution. We do have a team of people working with the government authorities, the Congress people, all the people that are looking at H5 from a government standpoint. We are working with all those groups to help them understand what we can do and how we can do it, working with them to figure out how we could introduce a vaccine into, say, for instance, the cattle world where it would be acceptable. But there's so many moving parts here. And you've got to work with a lot of different people, but we are engaged with all of the groups out there, the meat groups, the cattle groups, the dairy groups. We're engaged with all of them trying to help sort out what would be the best for the industry when it comes to vaccine.
Perfect. I mean, the speed is the big thing, right? And the ability to be flexible. Whenever we have an influenza and how much it changes and the ability for it to reassort, being able to be flexible, change things out quickly is a massive advantage. So I'm glad that I hear that you guys are in that conversation.
Yeah, we've submitted what they call an RFI to USDA, CVB. They requested, it's a request for information. It's really the APHIS group trying to figure out who's out there that can manufacture this vaccine and how long would it take to get there. So there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of questions, a lot of conversations. It's still a work in progress.
All right. Any final thoughts, Gary, before we get out of this episode?
Well, I think the big thing for me here is that we know that viruses change, new viruses come up, and we know that in the cattle world right now, we're working with, especially with coronavirus, in both enteric and respiratory disease, rotavirus, and we know that these vaccines are working quite well. And we have a different virus that was discovered a few years ago, influenza D virus in cattle. We find it a lot in dairy calves, and it's surprisingly increasing in other classes of cattle as well. And that causes respiratory disease. So that's something that we have available if that's a problem in your herd. And one of the couple other things that I would like to mention to the cattle world is that we have some unique products as well. One of those is a bovine papillomavirus, and it's a multi-strain wart vaccine. Amazingly, there's a lot of papillomavirus problems in some reproductive animals, so that especially the bulls that could use a vaccine, and we've been putting that out. We've been moving that into a lot of these herds that are challenged with some papillomavirus, working very well. And the last thing is that, and you might find this very interesting, we have a tick vaccine. And so you can vaccinate your cows for ticks, your calves for ticks. because that is a problem in beef cattle, usually in the southern states. And we know that ticks transmit disease. We don't have the vaccine for those diseases, but we have the vaccine for the ticks. And we're working on a vaccine that will cover 5 species of ticks. So we also have a project to work on horneflies, to vaccinate for horneflies. So we're not saying these may be the products that you're looking for to add to what you're currently doing for ticks and horneflies and give you a better result. So I think when it's not just about the viruses, there's other ways that we can help producers attack the problems that are a problem in the herd. So we're here to help. We can do lots of things right now. Talk to your veterinarian. We start with the veterinarian and we get the vaccine to the veterinarian. That is one requirement of the prescription process, is that the veterinarian has to be the one really managing the whole process.
I really appreciate you being on today, Gary. I'm sure we'll have you back to dive deeper into those products and make sure that I get to answer all the questions. And Brad, being a geneticist, will have, I'm sure, lots of questions about how you can vaccinate against the fly, because he does done a lot of fly work up at Morris. But yeah, I really appreciate you being here today. And don't worry, we'll have Gary back and we'll definitely have more to ask him and we'll dive deeper into it. If you guys want to know more about the company, MedGene, you can go to MedGeneLabs.com, MedGene Labs.com. That's the best place to go. If you have comments, questions, scathing rebuttals to this episode, please send those to themoosroom@umn.edu. You can check out our website, extension.umn.edu, and you can call me if you want to provide those scathing rebuttals, 612-624-3610. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks, Gary, for coming again.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Catch you guys all next week.